And that leads us into our segment for today. Dr. Arne Buss received an undergraduate degree in psychology at Rutgers University and a PhD from Cornell University. Now, he's been teaching at the undergraduate and graduate level for over 30 years. His passion is facilitating and teaching classes about interpersonal communication. He works with individuals and couples to resolve their interpersonal communication issues. And in the past 8 years, he's given presentations on interpersonal communication skills to a number of organizations in the Monterey and San Francisco area. He's also a distinguished Toastmaster who in 2011 was a semifinalist in the World Championship of Public Speaking. Now he joins us for his segment, Speaking of Listening, on the third Thursday of every month. And we always like to set him up with a little bit of a musical intro. So let's go ahead and welcome Dr. Arne Buss and Speaking of Listening.
Listen to the song here in my heart, a melody I start but can't complete. Listen to the sound from deep within. It's only beginning to find relief.
And welcome to Speaking of Listening on Good Vibrations Radio. As Solazar said, I'm your host, Arne Buss. Speaking of listening is about ways of improving your relationships by listening from your aware heart. And I will be giving workshops and other events. You can find out more information at ahbuss@consciousawareheart.com. That's my email. Or check out my website, consciousawareheart.com. And in speaking of listening, I focus on listening, which is much more than just hearing what the words the other person is saying. It's much, much more than that. It's about engaging them in a dialogue. And I'd like to mention the fact that Ginger Rogers once said that she had to do all of the same moves that Fred Astaire did, except she had to do them backwards and in high heels. So listening is very much like that, except for the high heels part, just in the sense that it's more following what the other person is saying and trying to really get beneath what the words are and into that underlying message. And I've found that it makes such a difference in all of my relationships. And my hope is that you find something very similar. Now, today I'm going to talk a little bit more about attitudes and behaviors that can block effective listening. And then I'm going to talk about some things I call matches in a problem area. And then, if time permitting, I'm going to talk a little bit about how our feelings are both helpful and unhelpful in such situations. My experience has been that we don't learn how to be an effective listener. Even in some of the communication work that I've been involved with, such as Toastmasters, as was mentioned, that's mostly about speaking, about how to be a more effective communicator of your ideas to someone else. And that, of course, is very important because communication is in part about expressing your ideas, but a big part of it is about hearing the other person's ideas. I think what we've seen, and at the time I'm speaking to you, we're just a few weeks away from a presidential election, and what I've noticed is there really has been very little listening on anybody's part. I have my own beliefs and opinions about that, but that's not the important thing. What I'm saying is that there's been very little, from what I can tell, of a genuine effort to understand deeply what people who disagree with you are really expressing. you know, and that hasn't been helped by some of the violent rhetoric that we've been hearing, for at least from some parts. But that doesn't change the fact that there is some very legitimate underlying angst and pain and going on with that. And unfortunately, it tends to get missed in again, what is sometimes a very violent and angry rhetoric. So, and I'm not going to talk about that explicitly, other than to notice that similar things happen in relationships. What I see in relationships that get into trouble is that each of the partners find themselves really behind these big walls, and they're like lobbing cannons over to the other one. Yeah, and that's not an effective relationship. The power of communication in a relationship is to break those walls down, or, you know, at least open the drawbridge so that there can be some kind of interaction. And so, again, I'm going to talk about some attitudes that block effective listening, and you may hear some which resonate with you. So the ones I'm going to talk about fall into a couple of different categories. The two categories I'm going to start with are one that's about fixing the other person, and the other is about kind of judging them, or a judgment that something is right or wrong, good or bad. So let's start with a response to fixing. And so the context of this is that you hear something from the other person that indicates that there's a charge or some kind of emotion underlying that. And the other presumption is that you care about this person, you care about the relationship. So the one thing that we often do is what I call the three deadly ones, and those are to give advice, to offer solutions and suggestions. In fact, advice, solutions, suggestions, and sometimes I call them the pain in the ass. One of the things that I was reading some humorous sixth grade history teacher, history class answers, you know, answers on a history test that were given by sixth graders, and one kind of jumped out at me, and it was about Socrates, and the answer that was given on the test was, Socrates was a famous Greek teacher who went around giving people advice. They killed him. You know, and the thing is that what's amusing about that is that you kind of make the connection between the fact that he was offered giving everybody advice, telling them what to do, and the fact that they, you know, that they did convict him and have him drink the hemlock. So in a sense, that's what happens in problem areas when we offer advice as the first reaction to what we hear. Now, if you think about it, you can't offer advice and also be an effective listener at the same time. So regardless of anything else, just think about that idea for a second. You know, if I'm offering advice, then that means that I'm not really hearing what the other person is saying. I'm not hearing the message. So I may have heard the words, but I may not get the message. And as I've spoken on other segments, the message that somebody's expressing is often very, very, it's often buried underneath the words. It's not in the words. And that's why tracking is so effective in identifying what that underlying message is. But if you're offering advice and solutions and suggestions as an immediate response or reaction, then you can't really be an effective listener. And if that's your first reaction, then the chances are you really haven't gotten enough of the story to be able to offer advice. So in other words, you haven't fully understood what the message is, and yet you're saying, well, here, I think you should do this, and I think you should do that. Because remember that the actual message being communicated is typically in code, especially in problem areas or areas that have a charge or feelings. Now consider the message or the meta message that you're sending to the other person if your first reaction is to give them advice. The meta message behind that is basically that the other person is either too ignorant or too stupid to figure it out for themselves. Now, that's probably not the message that you want to send. It's probably not something that you really believe, but that's how it comes across. And that, you know, if you think of a time when you were given advice instead of just really being listened to very deeply. And there's something very uncomfortable about it, because a part of you must be thinking, well, you know, if I knew what to do, I wouldn't be saying this. Or, you know, yeah, I already thought of that, you know, and why are you telling me this? You're trying to tell me something I don't know. In fact, a lot of times, even if somebody's seeking advice, they say, wait, what do you think I should do? I don't know what to do. They already know what they must do. This is in so many cases, but they want to find some way out of it. In other words, they know what they have to do, but they don't want to do it. And they want to just find some way. So if you say, well, why don't you try that, or why don't you do something else? You know, they're hoping to find a way out. But typically there isn't. So what should you do instead of giving advice? Well, I wouldn't say should, but if you want to be effective as a listener, first track the person, you know, track them to the lookup. And this will typically involve things called gentle challenges that I've spoken of before. In other words, instead of kind of shoving some things in their face, if it becomes clear that maybe there's something they haven't thought of, or maybe they thought of it and maybe discarded it, again, a gentle challenge is just kind of get them thinking about that. So here are some possible gentle challenges that I found to be effective. So you might say, so you have no idea what to do about it. Okay, so that's what's the gentle challenge about that is that you're, first of all, you're actually reflecting what they're saying, because if they're saying that they don't know what to do, then you're just simply validating that that's what's being expressed. But so many times that's not really the case. Another might be, so you feel you've tried everything possible. Now that's a slightly less gentle challenge, just in the sense that, you know, it may be that they really haven't thought of anything else, or it may be that they've thought of some things and simply disregarded them, or maybe they just haven't given it enough thought whatsoever. And that gentle challenge will help them, you know, think it through. Or if they've tried something, you might, you know, so you have no idea why that didn't work. You know, again, things like that. And then the gentle part is just the important part, not the challenge. When I was first working with gentle challenges, I felt that the challenge part was more important, but I've come to see that the gentle part is really the most important part. So you want to make those very gentle. You don't want to be shoving things in people's faces. So the second way that we try to fix people is by probing and questioning or interrogating. And again, the context of this is when some kind of angst or feeling is being expressed. And in fact, a lot of the communication teachers, they recommend asking questions instead of making statements or offering advice. And that's marginally better. However, what I'm cautioning is that when you ask questions, it tends to drive the person into their head, and it can also feel like being interrogated. Again, we're talking about a problem area, not something just casual like, you know, hey, where's the, you know, how do I get to Carnegie Hall or something like that? So when listening is called for, then sometimes they say something that's confusing or you don't understand, and so you want to ask a question. So there's nothing wrong with inquiring and clarifying, but asking it like a question can be a roadblock. In fact, you may have heard people have been talking about this so-called up-talking, where you kind of raise your voice at the end of a sentence. And when you hear that tonality, that implies a question, and it signifies either two things. One of them, it signifies either that the person saying it is unsure of what they're expressing, but because it sounds like a question, in a problem area like this, it can often feel like you're being interrogated. Questions can be roadblocks, and so what you want to do is you want to, if there's information that you need, you want to do it in such a way that doesn't take the speaker out of their narrative, and you don't want to take them out of their aware heart, because if you've been tracking them, then they've been slowly moving into their aware heart. And when you ask a question, it tends to take them into their head. Certain questions are especially entrapping, especially like, you know, why question, you know, why did you do that? You know, that really feels like you're trying to be pinned down, or even something like, you know, what happened? Can you feel the charge in that? Or a question like, well, who did that? And what's ineffective about that? You're implying that there's something wrong with the other person. You're playing ain't they wrong. I mean, and basically, nobody likes to feel interrogated under any circumstances. It tends to shut down communication. And remember, as a listener, the objective is to facilitate the speaker and ideally to come to their own realizations. And the underlying a principle of this is something that I've come to really see as being true, and that is that every one of us has our solutions inside of us. Every one of us knows at some place in our being what the right thing to do is. Sometimes it's just hard to reach that. Sometimes it's hard to accept that. Sometimes what we have to do is just something that we don't want to do. You know, who doesn't want to have dessert before their broccoli? But, you know, who doesn't want to skip exercising? Well, you know, it depends on what your objective is. So again, as a listener, you can facilitate the speaker to come to their own realizations. So instead of asking questions, you can use something called a gentle probe that I've also talked about previously. And that is asking the question in the form of a statement. See, even a statement that raises the voice at the end comes across as a question, even if it's not stated that way. So instead of saying, why did you do that? Say, you did that for a reason. Or even, I'd like to understand why that choice was made. Now, you notice in those that I didn't mix pronouns. So in the first one, I used a you but not an I. In the second one, I used an I but not a you. A lot to, you know, which one, so you're thinking, which one should I use? Generally, I found that the you tracking statements are slightly more effective in putting the focus on the speaker. When I say I'm putting the focus on me, the listener, and, you know, again, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that it's often more effective to put the focus on the speaker. You know, instead of what happened, say, so something happened. And in context, making a statement like that will naturally lead the other person to find the answer more in their aware heart than in their head, because they're not being asked the question. You know, I mean, why do questions create that kind of response? Well, I have some theories on that, and they probably go back to childhood or when we were in school and a teacher was asking a question that we didn't know the answer to. That felt very uncomfortable. Many times as a child, if you did something and your parents are interrogating you, who took the cookies? You know, who ate the, who got into the, you know, who got into the treats? And, you know, so it feels, it kind of calls back to those feelings. Now, this is not the same as being open to hearing constructive feedback, you know, especially, you know, with regards to advice. Receiving advice is something that is actually can be very helpful. And I'll talk a little bit more about some ways that constructive feedback can be helpful. Just as an example, I mean, yesterday I was giving a presentation to some students, and it had two parts, and I gave one part and then the next part. And then afterwards, I was talking with the instructor, and he said, you know, I think it would have worked better if you had reversed the order of the topics, if you'd done the second one first and the first one second. You know, again, that was advice. I hadn't really solicited it, but I thought about it, and he's right, and I thanked him. And again, that was a no problem area. It wasn't anything personal. He was just giving his professional opinion. And, you know, and I could have either agreed or not, but regardless, I appreciated the feedback. So there's nothing wrong with giving suggestions in the right circumstances. So now the second roadblock I want to talk about is the dichotomy of right or wrong, good or bad. And that comes across that when you hear something, to react by judging or criticizing or blaming and, you know, that was a stupid thing to do, or, you know, how could you be so thoughtless? You know, that was your own fault. Now, a lot of times those are the thoughts that run through our head as the first reaction to when we hear something. you know, what were you thinking? So it can be very challenging to listen to something, to someone, when you're disagreeing with what's being expressed, or they're really not seeing something. And there's such a strong temptation to react in one of these ways. However, emotionally mature adults know how to put aside their judgments and simply listen. They know how to just kind of say, well, it's not that I'm wrong about that, but for now, I just want to put that judgment to one side and hear what's going on for this other person. Because remember that hearing and validating is not the same as agreeing. So instead of saying that was a stupid thing to do, you could use gentle challenges or a gentle probe, such as, you know, maybe you could express why that choice was made. Or instead of saying, how could you be so thoughtless, you might say, well, so you felt that was your best choice in that situation, and you couldn't think of anything else to do. Instead of saying that was your own fault, you say, well, so you felt that you didn't have any choice but to do that, or so you're willing to accept the consequences of that choice. So judging, criticizing, and blaming are definitely ways of blocking communication, and that's pretty easy to see. You know. But the second one I want to talk about are ones that are not so easy to see, and those are praising or agreeing. And you may be a little surprised to hear me say that praising and agreeing with someone is a roadblock to effective listening. It's not that there's anything wrong with giving positive feedback or to someone. Where it gets into trouble is when it becomes manipulative. And praise is often used in a manipulative sense. So the other thing is that if it's legitimate for me to praise you, then I'm implicitly also saying, well, I can criticize you as well. See, praise amounts to conditional approval. I approve of you because you did well. But it's more effective as a listener and in a relationship to have unconditional regard. In other words, As a human being, you have inherent worth and value, regardless of what you do or don't do, or what you say or don't say. And so praising and agreeing tend to tap into it takes you away from the aware heart and puts you more in the sense of judgment, because praise and agreement are judgments. And it's not that there's anything wrong with judgments. We all have judgments all the time. We all have opinions. I mean, we're not human if we don't. But judgments and opinions don't exist in the aware heart. They exist in the head. The aware heart knows only love. It knows only a connection with other human beings. And judgment, even positive judgment, has no place in that. So it's more effective as a listener to put even the positive judgments aside So the blockages to communication I've talked about are fixing, which is to give advice, suggestions, or solutions, or to probe, question, or interrogate, or to have a right or wrong attitude, where you judge, criticize, blame, or disagree, or you praise and agree. Now, there are some other reactions that can inflame the situation. I call these matches because in problem areas, some of these actions and reactions are like throwing a lighted match on gasoline. And I'll talk about a few of them. The first one is to complain. Now, if you're in the world at all and not a hermit, there's usually something going on that you're not happy with, or in other words, something, we all have something to, quote, complain about. But complaining is, just inflames the situation in, again, we're talking about problem areas here. The message you're sending is, I'm a victim. And a quote I love from Eleanor Roosevelt is, there are no victims, only volunteers. Typically, a complaint is making somebody else wrong. It might be the person you're complaining to. It might be somebody else entirely. But when you do that, you put, you know, even if you're complaining about somebody else who's not in the room, you're putting the other person in a quandary. You're giving them a dilemma. So they can commiserate or sympathize, which means they're basically jumping into the hole with you and taking you out of your aware heart, or at least not leading you into it. And if they disagree or appear unsympathetic, then you're saying, well, you're not on my side. You're against me. And so that means that they're not in a position to help when you complain. A second match is to explain. So again, we're talking about problem areas here. In a neutral area, there's nothing wrong with explaining something. You're just conveying information. But in a problem area, it comes across as being defensive. And usually it's in reaction to a criticism, you know, either explicit or assumed. And the message is that the other person is wrong for what they said, and it doesn't take their feelings into account. So, you know, we see a lot of this in politics, or, you know, somebody's explaining this, that, and the other. And again, it's like a lighted match. And beyond explaining is actually defending, you know. So if you feel attacked, then you defend. There's a quote by Byron Katie that I just love, and she says that the first act of war is defense. Think about that. The first act of war is to defend. Now, if you feel you have to defend, then you're getting into the head. You're not in your aware heart. You're not seeing yourself as being okay and the other person as being okay. Another match is to deny. Deny, you know. And then the message that you're sending when you deny something is that the other person is crazy or delusional or ignorant or stupid. So, I mean, usually it's in, you know, somebody says, well, you did this. You know, no, I didn't. Well, you know, maybe you didn't, but denying it that way is not a way to really get to the bottom of what's happening. And perhaps the most surprising match is to apologize. Say, what? To apologize in a problem area immediately is one of the worst things. Now, why do I say that? Well, it's in reaction to a criticism from the other person. And if your first reaction is to say you're sorry, then you don't really mean that. If that's your first reaction, then what you're really saying is, oh, I want to move on to something else. I want to evade responsibility. I'm sorry. And a clue that that's happening, either with you or with someone else, is is if they're, you know, they're still upset, and you hear the phrase, "Well, I said I was sorry." Sorry doesn't cut it. Saying you're sorry does not mend the relationship. So apologizing, saying you're sorry like that, is like throwing a match on a lighted match on gasoline. So you might be asking yourself, so what can I do? You know, like all the things that I've listed, you know, I've taken away pretty much every way that that you might have responded. So what can you do? Well, I'm glad you asked. Instead of giving advice, suggestions, or solutions, try to find out what is going on with them and find out what they've tried, find out what their real problem is, try to find out what the real message is. Instead of questioning or interrogating, use gentle probes, which I've mentioned and also talked about previously. That's part of tracking. Gentle probes are the alternative to interrogation. Instead of judging or criticizing, use gentle challenges when you hear something that you feel is maybe at odds or contradictory. And that's gentle challenges are also part of tracking. And again, emphasize the gentle. Instead of complaining, use an impact statement. I've talked about impact statements before, and that's a much more effective, heart-centered way of expressing something that's not okay and a change that you'd like to have. Instead of explaining or defending, track to understand what the other person is feeling and why they're saying what they're saying. Instead of denying, you know, admit to what is true without making yourself wrong. Don't deny something which is absolutely true. And maybe track, if you feel that it isn't true, track to find out why the other person feels that way or feels that it's true. And instead of apologizing, start with an impact statement followed by tracking to understand what the impact was on them. This is something I'm going to talk about a little bit more in future segments, but using the same structure of impact statement and using tracking to get to the bottom of what the impact your behavior or words might have had on the other person so that they get that you get it. And until they get that you get it, an apology just isn't going to work. And then you can only when you get to the bottom of that and they really understand that you get what the impact was on them, then you can express regret. Then you can even say, I'm sorry in a way that really gets through. And until then, I'm sorry just doesn't cut it. So just to recap, I've been talking about attitudes and behavior that block effective listening. I've talked about some matches in a problem area and how feelings can kind of sometimes get in the way of effective communication. And so you have been listening to Speaking of Listening on Good Vibrations Radio. I've been your host, Arnie Buss. I appreciate so much your joining me today. You can listen to Speaking of Listening every third Thursday at 5 o'clock right here on Good Vibrations Radio. To learn more about effective listening and my workshops, you can email me at ahbuss, that's A-H-B-U-S-S, at consciousawareheart.com. You can like me on Facebook at AwareHeart or follow me on Twitter at Effect5Com, that's Effect, the number 5, C-O-M-M. And I haven't really been Twittering that much lately, so that may be a little bit dormant. You can visit my website at www.consciousawareheart, all one word, consciousawareheart.com. And on there, there's a link to archives of my Speaking of Listening segments that Solazar has graciously provided. And until we meet again, remember, listen from your aware heart.
You should have listened. There is someone here inside, someone I thought had died so long ago.